instead focus on the properties of the many-body localized phase itself. And more specifically, I want to tell you about its entanglement and dynamical properties. In particular, I will mention some of its experimental signatures, which can be probed in experiments with cold atoms and trapped ions. And then at the end of the talk, I will also mention some recent ideas on whether disorder is necessary for many-body localization. Okay? And well, first of all, big thanks to the organizers. This conference is a wonderful day to celebrate International Workers' Day, even though the rest of the world usually engages in various outdoors activities on that day. So there are quite a few experimentalists in the audience, so let me start with a brief introduction and tell you some of the motivation for coming back to this problem of many-body localization. So as we all know, concept of ergodicity plays a very important role in statistical physics. So ergodicity is a property of a system to explore the full allowed phase space with time. Many systems have this property, like the stadium billiard. But of course, it's important to understand when it breaks. And there are some simple and general examples, like phase transition. So system is picking one of the minima, and then usually it cannot access the rest of the phase space. Or there are funnier examples like these bears who confine themselves to some regions of the phase space. Now, when we think about quantum systems, an important and simple example is that of single particle Anderson localization. So as we have known for a long time, so if you have one single quantum particle scattering in a disorder potential under suitable conditions, quantum memory effects can localize it in some region of real space. Okay, so it can never access access the full space. And so here is a simple example of what a wave function of photons looks like in the delocalized and localized phases. So you see in the localized phase, it really lives only in some small part of the phase space. Now, of course, Anderson localization is an extremely important phenomenon, but in real life, we are dealing with systems of interacting particles. So a question that we want to address is how can ergodicity break, and can it break in general systems of interacting particles? And so in the natural line of attack, since we have this concept of Anderson localization, is to ask whether if you have many particles moving in the disorder potential, whether localization survives once you turn on interactions between them. And so as David mentioned, so this question was asked long time ago. It's a difficult one, so there were various outstanding people gave various answers under different conditions, but the most recent development, which really got people's attention, was due to the works of Basko Lenin-Reltschuler and Sasha Mirlin and David and his collaborators. And what they showed is that localization does survive in the presence of weak short-range interactions. And as I mentioned in this talk, I will focus on the properties of the many-body localized phase and argue that it has a simple structure and universal and interesting dynamical properties. So part of the motivation for studying, for coming back to this problem, is actually experimental developments. So over past 20 years or so, people have been developing, have made a lot of progress in realizing various artificial quantum systems of many particles which have tunable interactions and disorder. And so in some examples are cold atoms, which you can put in an optical lattice, and by changing the parameters of the lattice, tune their interaction parameters, polar molecules, and more recently, various spin systems like NV centers in diamond. And actually, people have made a lot of progress. People have already seen single particle Anderson localization in these systems. And very recently, several experimental groups, so in particular, Brian DeMarco's group at Urbana, so they have realized systems which both have interactions and strong tunable disorder. So bottom line is that really experiments are at the point where they can study this phenomenon of many-body localization in a controllable fashion. So in my talk, I will use notion of entanglement entropy a lot. So for those of you who are not too familiar with it, let me briefly introduce it. So let's say we have a many-body system in some pure state psi, and we want to understand how non-classical it is. And so the way to quantify it is essentially to ask how much entanglement between different parts of the system there is. So what you should do is to ask about the state of, let's say, left subsystem, and this you can describe by looking at the reduced density matrix of the subsystem. And then even though you've started from a mixed state, this reduced density matrix would describe, even though you started from a pure state, this reduced density matrix would describe a mixed state if your state is non-classical. And you can characterize how quantum it is by looking at the von Neumann entropy of this reduced density matrix. So this is the entanglement entropy. And in the past decade or so, this concept has been very, very enlightening and largely because it was realized that it provides a very sort of insightful way of describing and characterizing the quantum order and ground states. So, but today we will apply it to the excited states. So same disclaimer as in David's talk. So usually as condensed matter physicists, we study ground states, right? But today, let's forget about our habit, at least until the next talk, because I believe all the talks after mine would be about ground states. So and let's focus on the highly excited states of the many-body systems. So much of what I will tell you actually applies generally to many-body localized phases. So but it would be convenient to use a simple one-dimensional model of many-body localization, in particular for numerical simulations. So this model has two simple representations, so you can view it as a one-dimensional spinless interacting fermions moving in a disorder potential, or by Jordan-Wigner transformation, you can map it onto a random field XXZ spin 1/2 chain. And so, Vadim, David, and Arijit, and others studied this model numerically and have shown a few years ago that at strong enough disorder, so disorder here would be random on-site potential or random Z field, at strong enough disorder, this model shows many-body localized phase. So that's what I want you to know about it. So next, let me describe numerical work which posed the puzzle and largely largely inspired what I will tell you about later. So Joel Moore's group at Berkeley did the following simulation. So they did essentially a quantum quench. So what you do, you are preparing your system in some product state, and then you evolve it with your localized Hamiltonian, and you ask, okay, so how does information propagate in the system? So essentially, you're asking, how does entanglement grow as a function of time? And so in the simple, non-interacting, understand localized phase, behavior is essentially as expected, because you expect, okay, so you're dealing with the localized phase, so things far away don't know about each other. So, and only something would happen only near the boundary. So you would generate a little bit of entanglement, and then it would saturate to some constant value independent of the system size. And this is indeed the case in the non-interacting system. However, then they looked at the many-body localized system and found a very surprising result. So they found that even though you are localized, entanglement keeps growing for many decades in time. And moreover, it follows a very nice log T dependence. So this is very surprising, right? So first of all, because it tells you that there are some very, very long time scales in your system, right? So you see that it grows up to 10 to the power 10. So it's a huge time scale. And moreover, another very surprising feature was that saturated entanglement was actually extensive in the system size. So what the simulation tells you that even though there is no particle transport, there can still be information transport. So very remote parts of the system somehow learn about each other. And it was not clear what was the mechanism of this. So you could ask, okay, maybe system does equilibrate, but over a very long time. However, this you can rule out by showing that the saturated entanglement is much lower than what you would expect in a thermal system. So so what's going on here? So let me describe to you a cartoon explanation of this, and then this would lead us to a more general picture of the many-body localized phase, and would allow us to understand dynamics in it. So mechanism turns out to be very simple, and turns out you can understand it with a very simple example. So let's consider just two particles, and let's prepare them in a superposition state of two nearby orbitals. Okay, and let's ask how does entanglement grow with time? So in the many-body localized phase at weak interaction, so eigenstates look very much like product states. One particle here, one particle here, right, or one here, one here. However, the energies of these eigenstates change, right? They acquire this exponentially small correction interaction, which comes from the fact that the two particles can tunnel under this barrier and meet somewhere in between and interact. And usually you would completely neglect such a correction, but turns out that here it's important. Why is that? This is because over sufficiently long times, this energy correction would generate random phases, right? So over dephasing time, which is essentially inverse of this correction, and this would give rise to a large entanglement of log two between the blue and red particles. Okay, so this picture explains to you, at least intuitively, where such long time scales can come from, right? And what is the mechanism? What is this remaining dynamics in the many-body localized phase? Now we can, so bottom line is that really dynamics in the many-body localized phase is interaction-induced dephasing. Now using this intuition, we can understand the, what's going on for the relevant case of many particles. So in cartoon picture is that to get the eigenstates, to get the many-body localized eigenstates, what you need to do is to slightly locally deform the Slater determinant states, where you put particles in some of the localized orbitals but not others, right? So idea is that you can by local unitary transformation, you can connect through eigenstates to the simple Slater determinant type states. And you can, so this is what David briefly mentioned, that in the non-interacting phase, your conserved quantities are just occupation numbers, but in the interacting localized phase, you need to deform them a little bit and dress with many-body operators. Okay, but they still exist, and you can still label eigenstates by their value, so either they're occupied or not occupied. In this basis, the Hamiltonian would take a simple form, so it has to be diagonal in this occupation number, so you have single particle terms, and then you have interactions of two of this integral of motion, and then three-body terms, and so on. And of course, since you're in the localized phase, the interactions between remote groups of particles would decay exponentially. And this picture really allows you to understand the entanglement growth in the system. So if you start from an initial product state, it is generally a superposition of many eigenstates, which looks like that, roughly. And over time t, which is exponentially long in x, you would generate random phases in a chunk of size x, right? So you would reach maximum entanglement allowed by your initial state. So, and this allows you to get this log law and also understand various other dependencies, for example, dependency on disorder and so on. So, and you can confirm this numerically, and it all works out. So let me not go into details of the numerics, but rather let me ask the following question. So we have been, so far, this cartoon applies to the situation when interactions are weak, right? So can we extend this to the strongly interacting many-body localized phases? And a priori, it's not clear how to approach it. So for example, if you try to extend the perturbative approach of Alenier and Schuller, it's not clear if it's possible. So but you can still make progress, so you just have to look at this problem slightly differently. And the key is really this concept of integrals of local integrals of motion. So there are several ways of convincing yourself that local integrals of motion should be there. So let me describe one of them. So let's consider our model, and let's first just keep the terms which are diagonal in SZ, such that eigenstates are simply product states of up down. And let's slowly now turn on the coupling between different spins. So we would turn on the Jx and Jy terms in the Hamiltonian. So intuitively, you expect that as long as you're staying in the localized phase, your eigenstates would, you'll only have to do things locally, right? So you can get eigenstates by locally entangling just a few spins, and then maybe weakly correcting the states depending on the states of the spin far away. Okay, so the hypothesis which comes out of this picture is that you can diagonalize the Hamiltonian by sequence of local unitary transformations. Okay, and this might sound trivial, but actually it has very non-trivial consequences. So So in particular, right away, you see that if you dress as the operator with this local unitaries, which diagonalize your Hamiltonian, you end up with an operator which, first of all, commutes with the Hamiltonian, so it's an integral of motion, and second, it has a compact support, right? So you have, if system satisfies this property, you have a set of integrals of motion which is complete in the sense that if you specify all the values of this integrals of motion, you uniquely specify your eigenstate. So you can, by analogy with our cartoon, you can write down the Hamiltonian in the basis of this conserved quantity, so it has a very special structure. It depends only on tau z, right? So it cannot depend on tau x or tau y. And you can think of this as follows. So in the many-body localized phase, you can always find quantum bits which cannot relax. So David and Vadim call them L bits. And dynamics is really reduced to the very slow dephasing between these L bits. So let me mention another consequence of this picture, and actually let me also mention that this conjecture that you can diagonalize many-body localized Hamiltonian by a sequence of local unitaries was recently proven by Joe Imbrie, who will be here in a couple of weeks. But another interesting consequence is that even highly excited states in the many-body localized systems have area-low entanglement, okay, which tells you that they can be simulated efficiently. So now I can imagine experimentalists can wonder whether this growth of entanglement has any measurable consequence. And so the answer is yes. So and you can think about a couple of ways to see it in the experiment. So one simple way is to just do a quench experiment and then study the behavior of local observables. So turns out that because of this dephasing, system does reach a steady state. So at long times, your local observables stop fluctuating. Okay, and moreover, you can show that this slow growth of entanglement, its counterpart is the power law approach of the local observables to their stationary values. Okay, so this would be one way of seeing this physics in the experiment. And of course, this is different from the ergodic phase, where non-conserved quantities presumably would decay exponentially to their thermal values. Now, another idea which is suitable for spin systems is to do a spin ecotype experiment, and you can modify the spin ecosystem and essentially halfway through your sequence, you would want to create some superposition state of the first of all, let me tell you that if you just do a spin echo on the many-body localized system, you would see the perfect recovery because all you have is dephasing. However, if you want to see this effect of interaction between different spins, what you would want to do is to halfway through the sequence change the environment. And then this would reduce your spin echo signal, and this actually decays again as a power law of time. Okay, so this would be another way of studying this physics. So in the remaining 5 minutes, so let me mention two results, or it's actually work in progress. So first question I want to address, how can we find these conserved quantities? Right, so in principle, system which has these conserved quantities is quite interesting. So you could imagine that, well, maybe it gives you a way of having long-lived qubits. But how do we find them? So this is the first question. The second question, how would we manipulate them in the experiment. So one thing we've been trying is to essentially write down the unitary which diagonalizes your Hamiltonian in a maximally local form. This is highly non-trivial task, as it turned out. So, but Anusha and Isaac made some progress on it. And essentially, once you've constructed your local unitary, you can get integral of motion by simply dressing the local SZ operators. And then you can study how these constraint quantities are decomposed in terms of physical operators. So here is just an illustration how different distribution function of different amplitudes in this expansion. So you see that as it should, it's biggest on spin I, and then it decays away from it. And using this approach, we can also get terms of this Hamiltonian. So what you need to do is to just take a trace of H and suitable product of tau z, tau z. Okay? And here are some preliminary results. So you see indeed that the interactions decay exponentially. What this could be good for, so we are hoping that this would give insights into what happens as you go between localized phase and delocalized phase. And so, and finally, let me mention some ongoing work. Historically, people have always associated notion of Anderson localization with disorder. But recently, there have been three very interesting works which question whether it's necessary, right? And they proposed relatively simple models which might show some version of many-body localization, even though there is no disorder, no quench disorder in the system. Basic ingredients are actually very similar in all three works. So what you need is two species of spins, fast and slow, right? So you have black spins which can, let's say it's XY model with large coupling. These spins are interacting with each other, for example, on site. And of course, if you completely freeze the dynamics of slow spins, your eigenstates would be many-body localized. Well, in this case, they would be single-body localized. And this is because the configuration of the pink spins effectively produces disorder for the fast spins. So, you can imagine that localization might survive when you turn on dynamics of the slow spins. This question is quite hard to address in numerics. This is because in the even for a single spin models, your system size is very limited, and here it's even harder. So, but we've been trying to use growth of entanglement as a tool to answer whether there is localization in these models or not. And so if you do exact generalization on a small system, it looks quite encouraging. So you see growth of entanglement which goes as log t. So it is quite reminiscent of this results for the many-body localized phase. Now, of course, system size is very small, right? So we need to go to bigger system sizes, and preliminary result is that even at much bigger system sizes, there are states. There is a sizable fraction of states which maintain very low entanglement over very long times. Okay, so it looks encouraging. So at least there is very very slow dynamics in the system. So all right. So I'm out of time. So let me summarize. So I've described to you properties of the many body localized phase and some of its experimental signatures, and so I also mentioned this preliminary results on how to find integrals of motion and how to and whether you can have many body localization without Quench disorder. And so, and finally, let me thank my wonderful collaborators. So I've mentioned a few works. So Max is a grad student at MIT, and so and the rest are local. So I think many of them are in the audience. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dima. So maybe one quick question just to keep the audience engaged, if anybody has it. Otherwise, I'm sure Dima's happy to be answering questions socially. Yep.
Right. So essentially, I think here's the idea is that if you start from some initial product state, right, there is some randomness in this state, and this state gets stuck. So if it tries to make a move, right, it's not finding a resonance, right. So it's a you can think of about it as essentially you need to understand the properties of this hopping problem in the many body space. Right, and so it might be special for one dimension, right? Because in one dimension, probability that some configuration would repeat itself and you would be able to move, right, is becomes smaller and smaller as you increase the system size, right? So that's an open question. But the idea is that it is really the initial condition which effectively generates disorder.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll move on. Let's thank our speaker again.